This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Hing. Yes, Lim Soon Hing, not front row. Health and Living. In a 2016 survey revealed the shocking vacuum in Malaysian teenagers' knowledge of sexual and reproductive health. One third of teenagers believe that first-time sex cannot lead to pregnancy. And one-fifth trust that wearing two condoms is better than one. What are the consequences of such misconceptions? And how can we fill in the gaps? In the studio with me to explore the issues related to sexual and reproductive health education for teenagers are obstetrics and gynecology consultant Dr. Halina Haliza Siraj and certified parenting coach Zaid Mohammed. Welcome.
Thank you.
So the survey was done by a company, and after that, you both were pulled in to help spread the news.
Right. Well, in a way, you know, the findings, at least for me, being the people who are really facing all this adolescent pregnancy, you know, it's coming as something that is expected. You know, the level of knowledge is really not there yet.
So what you're saying is that young people in Malaysia do not have the information to arm themselves as far as sexual knowledge, what's happening to the bodies, what can happen. They don't have that knowledge.
Sorry to jump in there. I think not to say the don't have the knowledge, but we are not sure whether they have the right knowledge or not.
What do they know then? What is it they do know or don't know?
Okay, this is the tricky ones, because we are living in the information age. We want them to have scientific or kind of approved standard knowledge that is that can prevent them from doing things that may be damaging to themselves. Unfortunately, because of the digital age and all that, they are surrounded by all these easy to get Mr. Google, YouTube, and all sort of things. So which can be correct or not. We're not sure. We're not sure what they are getting. So that's why we are embarking on this initiative.
What does the survey tell us about their knowledge of sex? Or maybe that's not the right word to use in our culture. What, in terms of reproductive health, what do they know or don't know?
Okay, before answering that question, Soon Hing, apparently we are having this problem about sexuality being still a taboo issue and topics. And most probably that's the root problem.
That's the end of our show already. We said that's the problem.
Definitely we have to tackle this. You know, the longer we are actually keeping it as a taboo subject, and these are actually the things that we are seeing. There are a lot of gaps in terms of knowledge. They seem to get the information. But as what Zach was saying, you know, the sources is not verified. And unfortunately, because this is a taboo topic, so they just do not come forward to adults who can most probably provide them with information. Even if they go to their parents wouldn't be able to tell them, because this is really something like, you know, still something which is unexplored.
Yep.
Looking at some of the survey results, looking at some of the very discrete facts, nothing to do with morality, nothing to do with whether you should or you shouldn't. Some things like, you know, can you get pregnant on the first time when you have sexual intercourse? Mm-hmm. You have people saying, yeah, maybe cannot.
It's majority, you know, two-thirds, right? Believe that it is not possible. And that's a very dangerous knowledge to have, because they can make decisions based on that. To echo what the prof mentioned earlier, yes, they may come to parents, but what guarantee do we have that parents know how to answer? So this is another big question. Are we, you know, I'm a parent myself. Sometimes I'm a bit worried when my children start asking me all these sexual questions, because I may not know all the answers. That's why we are trying to educate ourselves together on this one. Yeah.
All right. If young people, for the most part, we don't know what they know or what they don't know, when do we start giving them information? Do we wait for them to say, Cikgu, what's the problem? And then you start answering, or Papa, Mama, I have an issue. Or do you start by saying, hey, I think you are about that age, I need to tell you some things about what's going on with your bodies?
Okay. I think we have to start by looking at the perspective that our children are very curious about their own body.
I am sure.
Yeah, and they can actually start asking those questions as early as maybe 4 or 5 years old.
Yep.
So the guidance is very simple. The moment your children are asking questions about their own body, that would be an opportunity to start introducing all the sexuality, reproductive health topics. Unfortunately, because it is still in that taboo zone, you know, so whenever your children are asking that, they will just be shut down and said, "No, this is dirty, and we don't talk about this." And then they would actually get this signal that my parents are definitely not the right source, or you know, they do not want to talk about this. So they will just go for another, you know, source of
find out from their friends.
Yeah.
Yep. I think to add to that, the knowledge can come both reactively and also proactively. What Prof mentioned earlier is probably if parents are waiting for the children, for the child to ask, it may not even happen at all. So as parents, I think we should be more proactive, going to the children with some sort of broader approach to sexual education. For example, it can start as early as babies. If we start, like boys and girls, the way we treat them, when we take a bath, for example, we can already start to tell them things that is appropriate at their age.
I wonder what, since you are the one that suggested this, Said, maybe you can give us example. How would you talk about it to a child?
I think body parts, for example, I think it's in our culture, Malaysian culture, we tend to name the body parts with funny names. I don't think I can mention some of them, right? So that is already indirectly an education by itself.
Exactly.
Meaning that, some part of your body is to be embarrassed of. You shouldn't talk about it. You should cover it and that kind of thing. So it is an education.
See, even on air, we cannot quite share it,
exactly.
Right?
I'm not sure whether
I can say out of that, we adults are carrying with us this burden, and we just pass it on to the younger people.
I think Prof can mention it because she's a doctor.
But at least we are making a progress, that we are actually talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we, from where we come from, we understand, most probably we have to do with this one step at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
But the thing is, we've been talking about this for a long time, though, in a sense that I was going through the newspapers looking at the headlines. Many years ago, we've been talking about this, and I, based on my own observation, I have not seen any major progress.
I would say the conversation is more about debating. Whose area is this? Mm-hmm. Then the parents are actually pushing it to the school to the parents, and then we ended up not actually addressing this. So we have to put a stop to that. As I always said, sexuality education cannot be taught in school, like maths, physics, geography.
Mm-hmm.
These are subjects that you can actually teach students whom parents are illiterates, even do not know how to speak, read or write. But they can become, best student in maths, but not sexuality education. This is a lot more about how you regard yourself, enhancing that identity, respect. It has to be culturally, embedded. It has to be within the social fabric. So the parents, are the most important people to actually, lay down the foundation.
If I were a parent who cannot quite talk about this, I would just say, I send my child to school to learn things that I don't know how to teach. I cannot teach my child math. I cannot teach my child science. I cannot teach my child about sex education. Schools take over.
True. I think that is called, I would say, outsourced. Too much outsourcing is not good. Certain things you cannot outsource. Even love, for example. Can you outsource love? You cannot. Same thing here. Sexual education. I think parents somehow need to take ownership. That's why one of the initiatives that we are making is coming up with a guide. I've personally gone through, and Prof also have gone through that guide, and I think it's very good. It's called Talk Now, Protect Always. Kind of a guide for parents and also for young people. So with the
how
guide,
young is young?
Young, we're talking about 20s and above. well, not to say 20s, but I think
18.
Yeah, those when they start to take control of their bodies. Teenagers and 20s. I think by 30s they should know.
Some would say that was way too old already.
Yeah, but I think the focus here is also on the parents. That's why. I can see the guide, this sticker for the parents.
Yeah, yeah.
And it goes by age. It starts as early as babies, and then kindergarten, primary school, secondary school, because the language to be used will be different. So hopefully, and I have not seen any of this guide before.
Yeah.
So hopefully this one will spark some sort of changes and mindset. And we are going on ground as well. Two of us, both of us, plus a few other experts will be sharing as many people as possible.
You will be talking to parents.
Yes, yes.
And it'd be wonderful to find out what exactly will you be telling them, and how will you be educating them to take over this responsibility. Mm. Seems to me that the push is making the parents become responsible and not the schools.
Mm. Okay, I guess this is all the responsibility of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
However, this campaign is more or less to empower parents that you have a very important role, and you need skills, definitely. You need knowledge. But it's not just you who are actually thinking that you are really not in it yet. So so this is a kind of empowering parents and
That's
adults.
Right. Yeah, empowering. Yep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, we will talk about how you empower parents. Folks, if you're out there and if you want to participate in this conversation, and if you have a question, you can call 03-77-10-9000, 03-77-10-9000, or you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, 018-789-8899. We'll carry on this conversation. This is Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. You're listening to Health and Living, and I'm Lim Soon Heng speaking with Dr. Haslina and Zayed Mohammed, who is a certified parenting coach, and Dr. Haslina is an obstetrics and gynecology consultant. Between boys and girls, is there a need to educate girls earlier?
Okay, I think that's a very interesting, if I can take this question. It's a classic question, you know, do you educate girls or boys? My answer would be yes, you must educate both. Earlier, girls earlier or boys earlier depends on the needs. I think typically we educate girls earlier because of changes to their body. However, many parents, many families neglect to educate boys, and I'm very particular about this because sex wouldn't happen without boys, and
of course,
and then we tend to like put the blame and the responsibilities and the burden to the girls, but the boys always go scot-free, and it really bothers me because then the boys tend to use sex as an object, as just an object, without elements of emotional, spiritual, and this kind of thing. And that's when they become toys.
Yeah, the reason I raised the question about should girls be taught first, simply from the fact that girls mature a lot earlier
that's
than boys.
True. Yeah, I think girls, we talk about protection, you know, what's happening to their bodies. And at the same time, we must teach boys about respect and responsibilities, two of my favorite words, respect and responsibilities, because they have a big part to play without knowing. So girls is more of physical changes and protection to themselves, you know, appropriate touches and this kind of thing. But for boys, it is more of a proactive, preventive kind of, and it's very intangible. At the same time, yes, of course, we teach them about body parts and whatnot, but I think we need to place more important premium on those intangible aspects. Yeah.
Most probably, before we actually look into whether boys or girls should have it, I think we need to correct the perception that the more, you know, information about sexuality that we give to adolescents, then the more promiscuous they will be. So this is the equation.
This is a misconception.
Yeah. Definitely. And because of that, we are having all this taboo and we are having all this negative perception towards this. So there's a lot of study that shows whenever sexuality education is being, you know, a given, and not just on the biological perspective. So that is the first thing that we need to correct, that sexuality is not just about the biological and the physiological interaction, you know, but it is also in the other four dimensions, which is cognitive. The most important sexual organ is the brain, Soon Heng. You know, that is a very important fact. Yeah? And then, of course, the emotional component of it. Okay, then that is actually where you express love, and then it is with consent, yeah, and the consequence of sexual relationship. And then you also have the social dimension. Okay, we are not talking about sexuality if you're just having had to live alone, but this is because we are interacting between genders, different ages, you know. So then we are talking about social dimension. And last but the most important is also it is spiritual. Mm-hmm. It is also having that component as well. So if you look at sexuality as holistic as that, then of course you realize how important it is. And not just, you know, going for objects, the physiological
pleasure.
Is yep. there a particular country with a system that somehow works best that you have looked into? I assume we cannot just look at how we're doing and just say, okay, how do we improve, yeah, without looking at other similar systems, countries with quite heavily religious culture?
Well, basically, there's actually a big study in the WHO level where they look into countries that has sexuality education, and which has been implemented for years. And when they compare the end product, which is the pregnancy rate, adolescent pregnancy rate, then we can see the difference between state having the highest and Netherlands is having the lowest. Well, and what is quite specific with Netherlands is that it is being taught as part of the culture and the belief. And the school is mainly sort of supporting what is being there in the house. So there is a good cooperation between parents and also schools. And basically, they are giving more information. So the adolescents in Netherlands are actually having sex later. And when they have sex, they're actually having it protected.
How interesting that you should pick Netherlands as the example, because I would think of it, you know, Europe as a country where it's mostly secular, and as a result that maybe without that taboo, the cultural taboo, it's easier to talk, and therefore information can be disseminated without a lot of, you know, hooks holding you back.
Okay, Sonic, maybe that is also the way things are in other European country. But what is quite obvious in Netherlands is that they are quite specific in looking at it as a part of the culture, the belief that is under, you know, is the foundation of that sexuality stance way of life.
Yeah. Just for a second, sure. We had a caller tried calling in and somehow the call got dropped. Can you please call in again, please, caller? Yeah. I want to pick up this question, Dr. Harlina. You said if there is this kind of concern about the spirituality and the culture, then straight away the responsibility falls very much on parents as opposed to schools. Schools will never be able to do that, especially when we have a quite diverse student body.
Yeah, that's why. And most probably, all this while we keep on blaming religion as the one that is so restrictive. You know, this is not supposed to be taught because this is going to just make our adolescent become more promiscuous, and that's it, period. And that actually is, to me, the most important obstacle that we need to overcome. In other words, to empower this society, it is also going back to all those religious upbringing, most probably, that, you know, the more information you have, the more you are supposed to be able to make the right decision. Okay? So don't blame. I mean, you can always look at religion as restrictive, but actually it is not so.
No, I don't think religion is restrictive. It's just that sometimes it creates a culture of let's not talk about it.
All right, okay.
And that's probably the restrictive part about, you know, being quite religiously focused or a conservative culture. What you are asserting is that we should actually talk about it. And there is a way to go about talking about it.
The good thing about this, Sun Heng, you can actually tell your children that you do not know, and you are going to find out together. So that is the empowering part of this campaign. You know, you don't have to know everything, but you can say that you don't know.
Then the child will turn around and look at you and say, you don't know and you have all these children?
Yeah, but it's better than running away. Even being honest to your kids is always a good thing. But running away from responsibility is not. So, you know, in fact, I have faced personally few situations when my younger children, when they were younger, they are very curious. You know, sometimes you're driving, you reach a junction and there are some funny advertisements on the street, and they started asking me, "Daddy, what is that? Why are you not buying that toy?" I said, "Whoops."
For a moment, I didn't exactly know what you were talking about. Yeah.
So I have two choices. Either I said, "Shut up and don't ask me this question," or I will, start a conversation. I use that as an opportunity to educate them. But which means I have to always be ready with simple, basic knowledge, according to their ages. So I think both Prof and I totally agree on that, meaning that there are moments, a lot of moments actually, where you can start these sexual conversations. So with the guide, hopefully you have a little bit more confidence, knowing that there's a lot of information out there put together to help parents come up with the proper answers.
Yeah. What do parents do when they cannot even pronounce those words? I'm not saying that they cannot say those words. It's just that, it gets stuck somewhere between the brain and the throat. Like, you cannot say those words. What do you do? How do you, what you are actually dealing with is a kind of a cultural hiccup.
Yeah.
Okay, Soon Heng, I guess we would like to think that parents these days are really not make up of that,
So we all can do it.
We should at least have that confidence. Mm-hmm. But we might need to have a little bit more training on that, okay? And unfortunately, in our society, all those body parts are considered obscene. When you say it, it is lucha, So that's it, okay? Yes, yeah. So now it's actually to most probably put this in a different perspective, that I have to talk about these body parts because these are important parts of your body. Mm-hmm. And for adolescents particularly, they are supposed to be healthy, Soon Heng. They are young. But sexual reproductive health is a very important aspect, because if they make wrong decision, it will have a lifelong impact on their life. Mm. And these are things that we have to bring it forward and make the conversation running flow very smoothly. And the most important thing is that parents should be looked upon as a reference point. They can just go anywhere. Our children can just, see anybody or meet with any kind of question, but they will return to the parents as the reference point. And we want to empower parents to have that confidence that you actually have it. Mm. But definitely we have to increase and top up our knowledge.
That's true.
Folks, if you want to participate in this conversation, or if you have a question for any of our guests here, Zaid Mohammed, a certified parenting coach, or Dr. Haliza Siraj, a obstetrics and gynecology consultant, you can call 03-7710-9000 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Question. Mm-hmm. You said parents are the reference point. The kids can get information from other places, but they must somehow come back to the parents for a confirmation. If parents cannot quite bear the responsibility and they look towards teachers to do it, what can teachers do?
Okay. I think teachers, they have a lot of students to take care of, and so many responsibilities. But having said that, teachers also need to, usually they are assigned certain subjects. And I've gotten feedbacks from some people. They said when it comes to the sexual subjects, the teacher will say, "Go and read on your own," or quickly skip through the pages.
So the teachers, our teachers also have the same kind of issues parents have sometimes.
Imagine you are facing with tens and tens of these active teenagers, you say one word, you can create a really hysterical response from the students. So I think teachers need to be prepared for that and need to find a way, maybe have it in a smaller groups or separate genders or something like that. I think Prof have a lot of experience on that.
Well, of course, we are actually going towards more of learner-centered education. Mm-hmm. There is no one-size-fits-all.
Yep.
There will be some generic information, but at the end of the day, you have to tailor-made your information and education to your learners. Mm-hmm. So that is the most important skill that parents and teachers must have. And particularly if there is actually a topic such as, let's say, puberty, let's say menstruation. Of course, boys has to know about it as well. The biology teacher can actually explain the process. But there will be a lot of questions that these young people want to ask. And I would recommend a dedicated, separate session where the girls can just ask anything. I come from all-girls school when I was that age. You know, the subject might just be for two sessions, which is about 45 minutes or 1.5 hours. But my biology teacher actually extended that to maybe 3 or 4 sessions because there's so many questions from us. And we have so many questions because the teacher was so accommodative and approachable, and there were no boys that is, going to say anything about us. Yep. So these are things, I think we are going more to the technicalities of it. But this can be done. And the most important thing is to make sure that these children have the courage or, the space to actually ask us.
So if I were a teenager, never asked, have never asked this question before, how do I go about asking it? To my parents.
Yeah.
How? Just open my mouth and just say it?
All right.
How would you suggest that this teenager approach his or her parents?
Ah, okay. A very good question. Actually, we do have a guide for that as well. You can. I find that it's very helpful if you have some reference rather than going blank with nothing. So it could be a picture, it could be a word, it could be a booklet or something, and get your use it as a conversation starter. Or sometimes it's a scene in a movie or a scene on a TV drama. They use it as a reference, so that
kind of like my friend has this problem.
Yeah, could be also. Yeah, that is also a good example. Talk about, I heard my friend told me about, this thing. Can you explain? Something like that. So rather than going direct, can you tell me about this? Yes. So have some sort of conversation starters, usually an object or point of reference. I think that's my advice to young people. And another thing, young people also need to be empowered, because when they see sex being used inappropriately, sometimes we receive those jokes on the internet, WhatsApp and whatnot. Young people need to say something, because if they feel very uncomfortable about it, they should talk to their parents. Or I've seen young people actually voice out, saying that, hey, you are older than me, I have a lot of respect for you, but now all the respect is gone when you start sharing this kind of jokes, sexual jokes. So that will jolt the adults into some sort of, some feeling that, they've betrayed the young.
I believe you 100% in that. Uh-huh. Just accept that. I feel that our young people have been so well inculcated with, respecting your elders, that everything our elders do, we are quiet.
Yeah, correct. Even if you disagree.
If you disagree, if you know they've done something wrong, we don't say anything.
Yeah, yeah. Right? That's unfortunate. But I think there are some who are already taking, and I've seen it with my own personal experience, they voice out, which is great.
Mm-hmm. What are some things parents must not do in this context?
You want to take that?
I guess we have not been talking about role modeling. And that is, we thought that we are very conservative and we don't talk about this because this is dirty. But on the other hand, the day-to-day relationship between the parents might indicate, totally not so conservative. I would like to take up from what Zaid was saying about this advertisement, at the traffic lights, and saying that adult toys it's just mainly plaything, and the power play, who is strong and who is weak, and that is most probably the thing that we need to correct. That it is not so. This aspect of sexual reproductive health is a very noble aspect of your life that you need to give a lot of attention, because this is actually the thing that defines us. So I think that shift has to be there, and that has to be our number one responsibility, to role model the healthy sexual relationship between parents and how we connect with others as well.
That's a tall order.
Yeah, really.
It is. Otherwise, we will not be in this situation. Yeah.
If you're talking about statistically, 40, 50% of marriages fall apart, mm-hmm. you know? So you're asking parents to role model what a good relationship is and a healthy relationship is. They might not be the most successful people or the most appropriate people even.
But I think it's a cycle as well. It feeds towards another. It's a vicious cycle. If we don't do it, if we continue doing it, then nobody will solve the problem. So we have to somehow get out of that cycle through this kind of intervention. Yeah. And then I think fathers, you know, always needs to play a bigger role, I feel. I echo what the prof has said. I've read somewhere that a daughter who has a strong, healthy relationship with the father will have less tendency to get involved with, you know, negative sexual situations because they feel loved, they feel valued. So this is another aspect of role model. It's quite simple to do.
Yeah. No, I was asking you, like, you know, what should parents not do?
Mm-hmm.
For instance, here's a question that's coming. It says, this is what this person has asked. Okay. Can you ask these guys, you two basically, discuss about kids and genders or gender stereotypes, like boys who love to wear dresses? How would you tackle this positively? So in other words, you know, as a parent, now, is there something you should say, look, this is not allowed? Mm-hmm. Or how would you handle this?
All right. I guess this is definitely not an easy issue to tackle. Well, when talking about gender, as compared to most probably biological aspect, definitely that has been sort of predetermined. Even, well, as a practitioner, when I deliver a baby, then the most important thing that the parents would like to know whether it's a boy or a girl, because they have to start naming the baby with a boy's name or a girl's name, and then deciding maybe, oh, the room has been decorated pink, so fortunately it's a girl. Mm-hmm. So pink for girls. So these are all the gender and the social construct. And of course, along the way, we are going to find the way you and me has been sort of brought up, Suhing, is very much determined by that as well. Now, you are talking about something that might not conform to all this usual normative that we have. So this has to be sort of, I would say, parents, when they are actually facing all this, so they, like in the guides, we are actually asking them not to sort of freak out. Okay, there are actually a lot more things you have to sort of, you know, these are actually children that need your special attention.
So this is not a time to start screaming and shouting, regardless of what you think.
Yeah, for anything about sexual, even when you ask where does baby comes from, that they can be regarded as very dirty questions. You know?
We've got a call coming through.
All right. Okay.
Go on, caller. Robert?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Suning and Dr. Hazina. On the question of self-gratification or masturbation, what is your stand on advising teenage girls from practicing it?
Okay, this is a question. The question, thank you. Thank you, Robert. The question that he has asked is, this issue about masturbation, how do you deal with that?
Mm-hmm. Masturbation. Yeah. Okay. I assume it's for boys. Presumably.
I will answer that as well, but let's give to Zaid first.
Okay. I think this is, again, a taboo that, you know, most people actually don't want to admit doing it, but we know it's happening. So as parents, issue of masturbation, to me, my own practice is to be, to tell them the right from the wrong, whether first of all, to tell them it's a wrong actions. Depending on, it's actually your choice, whether you're coming from religious point of view or social or just personal health. So you have to find a point to start. For example, I would come from religious point of view, saying that, you know, in our religion, it's not allowed. There are consequences, and there are so-called, what do you call it, repercussion later in this world and later on. So it, in a nutshell, it's a way for me to tell my children that it's wrong. But having said that, if they're still doing it, your responsibility is to know why are they doing it. Is it because of They are exposed to stimulations. They're exposed to, you know, temptations. And then our job is to remove, try to remove those temptations as much as possible. For example, if you are very liberal in giving your children gadgets, you know, they can bring the gadget anywhere they like, and you don't even care whether what type of apps or what type of programs they access, websites they access, then partly it is our fault as well. But if you have done everything you can to prevent them from the temptations and you have given them educations and they still do it, I guess it's part of their, you know, their own learning process. And then, but we never give up. We continue to tell. Hopefully, one day they see the you know, if you think it's wrong, then they will understand why it's wrong and they stop doing it on their own, because you can't really control, right? You cannot be invading their privacy and that kind of thing. So do as much as you can, educating and more education.
Okay, Prof. I might be, you know, I might not go along with what Zaid is saying, sure. Because mm-hmm. as a health practitioner, I have my own opinion about masturbation. Mm-hmm. It is actually, of course, when do you start to realize that the children masturbate? Mm-hmm. That is important thing. Mm-hmm. Do you actually, you know, caught them red-handed or so-called, or they are actually the one who actually tell you that I am actually been doing this and that. And that is possible if you have a very, you know, a very...
warm relationship with the child.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Your communication is... And to me, when a child starts to masturbate, it is actually... you know, the stage where they start to become aware of their body. There are some parts of their body that is more pleasurable. Mm. And that just shows how inquisitive your child is. Mm. And that would be a learning point. That would be a learning opportunity.
I think we'll need to take a pause right here so that we can... No? Mm? Okay. to tell you that you can... If you want to participate in this conversation, you can call in 03-771-09000 or 018 on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Back to your thing about this masturbation, because there is literature to say that it happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And see, for me, the whole notion of teaching sex education has always come up against this thing about taboos of culture and religion. Mm. And once we have that, I don't know how can we... Maybe that's why we are stuck in Malaysia for so long that we cannot quite move forward.
That's true. Yeah. Mm. And of course, I've been sort of engaged in this kind of discussion about, you know, masturbation and whether, you know... And of course, if Zaid actually look at it from the religious perspective, then that's where, you know, he's going to direct the whole conversation. Yeah. But for me, it's more of, you know... most probably exploring why do you do that and what is actually the consequence of it. And this is more to me, is it's very important to put this right, because this is where children will actually look at you as, you know, source of information, or just merely, you know, people who are just going to, you know, whack you down with all the do's and don'ts. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then that might just shut the whole, you know, conversation to a stop. That might be it, but I'm sure Zaid has a very good relationship with his boys. I know that, and I would eventually put it for them that you know, this is actually what the religion say, and the reason is because of that. Mm-hmm. But of course, this is supposed to be a very personal act between you in your room.
That's
you
know? True.
And that is actually your private matter.
Private moment.
Yes.
I always insist on, emphasize on trust and responsibilities to, you know, and I think all parents can do that as well.
Yeah.
Because you cannot be observing them 24/7.
Sure.
And they shouldn't be afraid of you. They shouldn't do or not do something because they're afraid, but because they respect you and they know the trust is on their shoulders. In fact, children will know that it's a heavy thing, having a trust being placed on them. So you can't really, I don't think you can really eradicate that. If they really want to do it, they will do it. But our job as parents is to avoid, to remove whatever chances they want to do it.
I'll give you each a minute. What is it that parents at least must not do?
Must not do, eh?
I would say...
To some degree, you have said that must not go ballistic.
Yeah, right. I would say that you shouldn't sort of frame sexuality as something dirty, something which is, you know, you should not talk about it. And in fact, you should try to look at it as a very important component of your life. I think that's the basic of everything.
I think similarly, I think we have what parents must not do is must not run away from the subject because of whatever reasons. We must not think of sexual education is belong to schools, just schools, but we should work together rather than totally outsourcing to someone else, hoping that it's solved by itself. It's not going to happen.
I think the Ministry of Education will thank you very much that you have freed all their teachers of that responsibility or that guilt that they're not doing it very well.
We have to work together.
You moved the responsibility back onto parents' shoulders. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Halina Haliza and Zaid Mohammed. Both thank you very much.
Most welcome. Okay, thank you.
5 minutes.
This is Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.